This is the Cube Show on Demand. Listen live weekdays 6 to 10. Get loud.
I really don't understand your question. I don't know if I can't hear or you guys can't talk in the mic or whatever.
Get crazy.
You go find them, you throw your arms around them, you give them a big kiss on the mouth if you're a girl.
Get nuts.
Get up, baby. Get up. Oh, yeah, it's gone.
It's the Cube Show.
This is All Born Radio.
I am a good person.
Man, y'all take it easy down there on the off, baby.
God want us to win the world championship.
You're doing it wrong. You're doing the wrong things.
Is anybody else tired or is it just me?
Hey, legitimate question, though.
Okay.
I'm drunk right now.
Wow.
Another one!
I!
And now, Cole Kublick.
He is bad Auburn man.
Cube Show, Sports Radio 730 and 103.9 The Yump. And as we do each and every morning, we kick off hour number three with our good friend,
Conrad Thompson.
Good morning, Conrad. How are you?
Hey, how's it going, guys? How are you? Thanks for having me.
Archie wants to ask you a question about these tickets for Mayweather-McGregor and how they're being sold or not sold. But first up, we were discussing how a lot of these big fight tickets are handled when the fight takes place in a casino. And I know you and I have discussed that before. So educate our listeners on when, we'll just say, Mayweather-Bradley is at the MGM, how much control the casino has over how many tickets that take place in the, because the fight taking place in their casino arena.
Well, not just that. They've actually started doing this at the T-Mobile Arena, which is, you know, maybe a year or two old at this point. But there are so many casinos in Las Vegas, of course, that are using these tickets as bait for their gamblers. So the casinos don't make their money on the shows, and they don't make their money on the buffets, and they don't make their money on hosting these events. They make their money by going ahead and having people come in and bet really big at the tables. So their goal is, hey, let's buy as many of these tickets as we can, and then let's pick up the phone and start calling our quote-unquote whales and use these tickets as bait to get them to come in. So it would be, you know, hello, Mr. Oil Farmer. We have got a private tent lined up for you, and we've got a suite. And we've got front row show tickets for your wife. And we have got ringside seats for Mayweather-McGregor if you'd like to bring a friend. And so they'll set them up. And this is all just kind of comped because they know, hey, if we get enough, you know, Blue Walker and Johnny Blue Label in this dude, he's going to go ahead and drop, you know, $3 million downstairs. That's the play, not, hey, let's see if we can bilk $2,500 out of somebody for this fight.
I appreciate you explaining how the casino host attracts the Beverly Hillbillies to the MGM Grand. So now,
dude,
we know.
It is absolutely real. And I'll tell you what, you would be surprised how many of the jets that come in. There's like a huge concentration of jets that come from LA. I think everybody could get that. You got another contingent that comes from New York. But realistically, Texas is probably number three. And somewhere on the list in here, and certainly number one just based on betting volume, Asia absolutely loves this. I befriended a casino host out there, and they say that the majority, the lion's share of the comps that they do, go to wealthy Asian businessmen. And they're convincing them to fly all the way over, and they use this free stuff as bait. So the guys will fly themselves over, and on a private jet from Asia, it's going to run them, I don't know, $80,000, even at a hookup price. But they'll spend $80,000 because they feel like they're getting a free hotel suite and free fight tickets, and in their head, that's a great deal. And then, of course, they go downstairs and play Keno or whatever the hell they're terrible at, and the casino calls it a win.
Conrad, this came up because I saw Darren Revelle tweet that there are only 50 seats sold yesterday on StubHub for the fight itself. And he said Ticketmaster restrictions are killing the buzz for the tickets for this fight. And I found that the Ticketmaster is trying to do something different. They're trying to get the more tickets in the hands of fans, not scalpers, they say. So you had to register through Ticketmaster, get verified through Ticketmaster, and then you would have the opportunity then to receive a unique offer code and link to use when you could purchase the tickets starting at 10 a.m. yesterday. So you had to be registered, you had to be verified, and then you had to receive a code and a link to be able to purchase the tickets. And I guess by then, going through all that process, I guess then you could buy the tickets and I guess put them back over on StubHub and try to make some money. Is this good for fans in general to try to keep the hands? Does this help keep the tickets out of the hands of scalpers?
No, it absolutely does. It is nice of them to do, but let me just go ahead and give you a spoiler. They're only doing that for a small percentage of the tickets. A bulk of these are still going to be what we would call casino buys, and the casinos will pay well above what market rate may be. I can't tell you how many times I've been to Las Vegas and bought my fight tickets the afternoon of the fight. I'm talking 2 hours from fight time, and I would get a $2,500 ticket for $600, and I would always meet some kid, you know, some 17-year-old with a backwards flat bill who had, you know, the latest iPhone with all the little bells and whistles on it. And that dude was just tagging along with his dad who got these comps, and his dad didn't care about the fight tickets. He wanted to go out there and, I don't know, meet strangers for sex or something and wanted to distract the son for a few minutes. So here you go. Go see this UFC fight or go see Floyd Mayweather or whatever. And then that kid meets me out front. I give him $600. He goes and buys drugs. What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas.
Wow. Conrad Thompson from First Family Mortgage with us.
Vegas is dirty, apparently.
Yeah. Dude, it is the worst town in the history of towns. And everything that you have been presented with is completely factual. But then there's the underbelly, the underside. And so, you know, the kudos for Ticketmaster for trying to do something here. But over half of the tickets were pre-negotiated beforehand because they want to come out and they want to announce, you know, hey, we've got an all-time gate record here today, and we have set all kinds of new financial records for the amount of tickets sold and the amount of revenue at the gate for this fight. And that was really planned all along because the casinos agreed to buy it. And they'll pay whatever because it's a cost of doing business. You'll pay $6,000 for a ticket that the market may dictate is only worth $1,800. If that $6,000 is good bait for your whale bettors. So it's just a weird, this whole process you're talking about, that would never be necessary in Huntsville or Birmingham or Nashville or Atlanta. But it is out there because everybody's got an angle. It's a weird town.
I want to go a step further with what you just said about the misconceptions and truth of Las Vegas. Arky and I were talking about it because he's never been, and he was hypothetically a couple weeks ago. He was saying, you know, if we went, you know, what if we didn't want to do, you know, the rager clubs and, you know, blasting ecstasy until 7 a.m, whatever. He's like, what would we do? Are there stuff to do like for families and whatnot? And I was like, there's actually really nice, cool stuff to do during the day. There's great restaurants. There's great shopping. You know,
to be fair, I didn't rule out ecstasy.
The pools don't always have to be, you know, three-quarter naked and out of control during the day. There are relaxing pools where you can enjoy yourself. And he's like, so what, we would just like go walk down the strip? And I said, no. Well, if you want to see the absolute worst filth bottom of the barrel of Las Vegas, then yes, you should take a hike down the strip and you'll feel much better about your life based on everything that you see.
Yeah, you could not have hit the nail on the head anymore there. Walking down the strip the first time, I did this in 1999. So I was 18 years old and I went to Vegas with my parents. What a sight this is. And as we're just walking down the strip, just as you described, we didn't know any better. We had never been there before. There is, I mean, a legion of what's probably illegal immigrants who don't speak any English but have mastered the art of popping paper to get your attention. And as soon as you look their way, stuck in your face are like 8 brochures filled with naked women. And all of them are to your room direct, faster than pizza, 30 minutes or less, or it's free, blah, blah, blah. And I remember looking at my dad like, where did you bring me and why is mom here? I mean, It was quite the experience. It is the underbelly of the world for sure. But they are trying to clean that up a little bit because Cole's exactly right. You know, they've got rides out there and indoor racetracks and lots of really cool stuff for kids. But you've got to be careful because if you accidentally take a left when you should have went right, wow. You're at the worst of everything.
It gets ugly in a hurry. It's never the worst of anything. It's actually the best of everything, including best in business year after year after year at First Family Mortgage. Conrad, tell our listeners how you can help them out.
Well, it's a quick 10-minute phone call right now on your ride to work to get you started. How's this? No house payments until October. And we're right upon it. School is coming back. And so all of a sudden when moms and dads have to realize, wow, I've got to buy all this stuff, and you need new clothes, and it's time for new shoes. You've got all these new expenses this time of year that you don't normally have. And, man, don't get me started on college tuition. That's a whole nother level. If you need a little extra cash, now is the time to call. And let me get it in front of it right now. If you're a small business owner and you've been filing those extensions on your tax returns, October 15th will be here before you know it. Let's go ahead and put some money in your pocket right now. We're going to get you a better mortgage, help you pay off all your credit card debt, and let you take a little bit of a break from house payments. No payments until October, but I encourage you, call today. I've got a hunch that rates are going up, and I think it's going to happen tomorrow. Find out right now for free how much money you can save, and you don't need perfect credit. We can even approve credit scores in the 500s. You don't need money out of your pocket. If we can't save you money, we won't waste your time. At 425-0105.
Great stuff, Conrad. Look forward to catching up tomorrow.
Thanks, guys.
Conrad Thompson with First Family Mortgage. You heard him there saying that rates might be going up soon as quickly as tomorrow. So if you've been considering making that phone call, do it today. 425-0105. Let's get to 10 After Tweets now, brought to you as well by First Family Mortgage.
Bring me the tweets!
You can tweet into the show at Cube Show. Best way to be a part. William Wise at the Wise Choice 17 tweets at Cole Kubrick. To answer your question, that has been the real issue with college football, Elite Eight, and everyone else.
Yeah, so you tease that going in, is that what we want? That's kind of what we've created.
Yeah.
And
anytime somebody gets close, the Blue Blood fan nation gets upset. They don't belong. We don't want them. They're cheating. Get them out of here.
There's no real such thing as parity in college football.
No.
There are years when TCU's back when they're in the WAC, and Boise State's when they're in the Mountain West. I guess they're still in the Mountain West. There are years when Arkansas State comes up and has a really good run, or there are years when, you know, obviously
Hawaii did it one time.
Yeah, Northern Illinois. These guys will show up sometimes and pop up and get themselves a BCS game back in the day, and now you know, the New Year's Six game. We've created an environment where if you don't have the most money, it is going to be really hard to compete. And there's no real way to adjust that when you think about it. Okay, I take that back. There is one way you can do it, which I don't know how they'd ever do it. I think you'd have to reduce scholarships again. You'd have to reduce it to like 70 or something to be able to get true parity. Because right now with 85, you still can Alabama can still stack up. Ohio State can still stack players. Penn State, all guys can just stack guys. If you want the true parity, you have to be able to enforce rules to create that. And that parity would probably be scholarship production because that means fewer guys could go to Alabama, and they'd have to go to, you know, Florida's and then Georgia Tech's and Vanderbilt's of the world. And then maybe you could bring guys up. But that's really about the only way that I think you could do it. Legitimately, and they've done it before. They've reduced scholarships before.
Matthew Knowles tweets in at Cube Show. Conrad dropping some knowledge this morning. B-Ran responding to that. He's not lying either. Hashtag been there, seen that. Chris Crow tweets at Cube Show. I hope if that Arky Shade does X in Vegas, I hope it's on Facebook Live in his Instagram story.
First of all, I don't know how to do an Instagram story, but Facebook Live, I'll get it. That's probably when I won't just be reading rap. I'll be rapping. Me and Johnny Manziel hanging out at the I'm just going to say Venetian. That's one of them, right?
Oh, that's what you... Okay. I've stayed there many times. It's a great place. Great property.
But I don't want to do it in the Venetian. What's the name of one of the pool clubs? Like a pool?
Well, the Hard Rock Pool is... That's where they have Rehab, the party that had its own TV show on True TV. Yeah.
Because it seems like Hard Rock Cafe is kind of
lame.
So
Mandalay Bay has – well, most hotels have two pools. So Mandalay Bay has two pools, and one is topless, optional.
Yeah. I'll tell you what option I choose there. Yes. I will go topless. I will go topless there.
All right. The Wynn has a really, really good pool scene. There's two. One is – most of them have like a family pool and then a crazy pool. Which you belong at the crazy pool.
Yeah,
so
I do.
It's all good.
What's better, crazy pool or crazy train?
We talking about Vegas? Probably train.
I'm listening.
But,
okay. All right. Fair enough. Hey, Cole, this happened yesterday.
We're talking like, you know, what to play in warm-ups at a college football game.
Pool. Crazy pool. Cole, Pro Football Talk. This happened yesterday. For the first time this season, a team has shown interest in Robert Griffin III. Cole, who is he working out with today? Which NFL team has shown interest in RG3 that they're going to work him out today? It'll be his first visit this offseason. He canceled another one, according to Adam Schefter. But which NFL team has shown interest, Cole?
I'll go Raiders.
Close. Very close. San Diego / Los Angeles.
I was going to say, I didn't think San Diego had a team anymore.
No, they don't, really. But Robert Griffin III getting some more looks at.
How weird is it that Robert Griffin III is having to find a place to work out to try and make a team? I mean, that alone just seems a little odd.
That guy's fall from grace has been something, man.
At UMish Football tweets, ready to roll for hashtag B1G Media Day, hashtag Go Blue. Boy, they use that little graph M, that little yellow that's supposed to be like the chart that could be mistaken for an M.
They call
it
Michigan all the time. I don't like it. I don't like it.
Just a heads up, Harbaugh's wearing a sweatshirt, khakis, and a Michigan baseball hat.
No one looks better than Jim Harbaugh. Can I also say this?
That guy's got his uniform, doesn't he?
I'm going to re-up, and every time this comes up, I'm gonna do this. I'm going to reinstitute my claim that the iPhone, the Android, should all have emojis for college football teams. By now, we should have Alabama's logo, Tennessee's logo.
You can go get them. It's just you have to download the little emoji thing for your school.
No. I need something that has
You're just
all
saying
of
standard
them.
Procedure should have.
Yes.
It.
And I know that could be intellectual property.
But don't you think they would do NFL, Major League Baseball, NBA first?
They
it
might
should be
but
there as well.
They might, but here's the thing. They weren't trying to do a chart for M. That's what brought it up. College football is better than the NFL and more fun anyway.
Awful announcing tweets. EMCC head coach Buddy Stevens is hoping Last Chance U will return to a school for a third season.
Well, should know pretty soon.
Why? It didn't seem like they were he was very happy with the cameras being around a lot
I'll
of the time.
I'll say this. This year, if you haven't seen Last Chance U yet, I think you're really going to like it. Even better than the first season. But if you haven't seen Last Chance U, he is a lot more confrontational with cameras this year than he was last year.
Literally, get out!
Shove them out of places all over the time.
Get out. That's his solution to everything. Get him out.
He's shoving cameras.
Get him out.
You guys got to get out of here.
Get out.
Or if nothing else, I told you, don't be between me and a player, which I kind of understand that.
But that's after he basically kicked him out. And then he's like, oh, yeah, they're giving us a big check. They can stay.
He cooled himself off a little bit. By the way, he should know soon. It's late July.
He should know pretty soon
if they want to return for season three. But there's no Brittany Wagner.
No, but everyone's going to want to meet the new Brittany.
Not me. I'm going to want to meet the new Cam.
Speaking of Last Chance U, Davin Williams, the defensive line coach at East Mississippi Community College, will join us next right here on Cube Show. Sports Radio 730 and 103.9 The Yum. We talked some Last Chance U yesterday. We're going to talk some more East Mississippi Community College today. Defensive line coach Davin Williams. Follow him on Twitter at DavLW, at DAVLW. Davin, how you doing, man? It's good to catch up.
Man, I'm doing good, Cole. How you doing, man? Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. I'm doing great. We go way back. We were teammates at Auburn for a little while. Obviously, O-lineman and D-lineman, so winning against each other in practice a little bit. But it's good to see you doing good things. And I don't know if you've followed on Twitter or not the last couple of days as we've been talking about the show. A lot of people have been just talking about big fans they are of you and sort of how you handle yourself and what you're doing there at East Mississippi Community College. But tell us first and foremost how you landed there. How did you end up in Scuba, Mississippi?
Well, in 2014, I was the defensive line coach at Murray. And Jordan Leslie was a teammate of mine at Troy when I was at Troy. And he worked his way up the ranks in junior college football. And, you know, they had opportunity to come up and they had opportunity to come open. And he called me. And I accepted, man. I've been here ever since.
Did you have any idea what you were getting into?
I did not, you know. I mean, you know, going into it when I was, when I took the job, man, you know, I was talking to people that I knew that recruited JUCO and all that. They said it was a different league, you know, the kids were different and this, that, and the third. But, you know, I mean, kids are going to be kids no matter where you go. You know, there's going to be problems in four-year schools just like we have problems here, you know.
That's one of the things. You know, one of the things, Davin, I think that the people appreciate about you is what you just did in your answer there is your honesty. I know my producer, Arky, has mentioned a couple of times the one question you're asked on season two about if you feel like a player's attitude is going to affect how he's recruited, and you give about a 30-second pause and just say, maybe. How much people see Last Chance U and the kids in Scuba and they think, boy, what a bunch of headaches. And these kids don't appreciate where they are. They don't understand. But you've also played Division I football, and you've dealt with guys who have played Division I football. How much different are the attitudes and the guys you deal with based on what you hear, what you see from other maybe Power 5 schools?
Well, you know, it's a little bit different. You know, I will be honest and say it's a little bit different. You know, some of these kids that we have, you know, they come from different backgrounds, and it's amazing some of the things that we know in recruiting these young men, and the situation they have at home is different. So I can understand why they're different. Their thinking is different, you know, versus kids that are at four-year institutions. You know, normally those kids are, you know, come from good home, two-parent home, you know, middle class, you know, that type of thing, and we would never have to hurt anything to fight, you know, really for much, you know. But here, you know, it's a little bit different. You know, you have a lot of different kids that come from a background that's, you know, really not that stable, not that good, you know. So when they get here, you know, they take their frustrations out, you know, with us and with schoolwork and with things of that nature. But, you know, at the end of the day, you got to show them that you care. And that's the one lesson that I've learned since I've been here. I learned to care more, you know. Not saying that, you know, these kids' situations have been sensitive to me, but the fact that, you know, they don't know how to fight and they don't know how to move on, and you know, that right there, you know, made me care. Because, you know, I've too, you know, we all have been in situations where we just quit and gave up and missed out on opportunity. Well, this situation is too big for that, you know, and that's the story that I try to tell them. You know, you just got to keep fighting and keep pushing, man.
Coach, man, I love you. Watching you the last couple seasons, this year I fell even deeper in love, and I watched it feeling more and more frustrated with you at some of the moments with some of the players. And I was curious because you talk about some of these players who, you know, they're not expecting to be there. They think they should be back up in at the D1 level. What's the most frustrating part about trying to coach guys like that that come down from the D1 level to try to, you know, sort of rehabilitate themselves classwork-wise and socially?
Well, you know, when they come in and they think that, you know, that they are better than, you know, the guys that we got here, some of them, you know. And once they get here, once they realize that, you know, we have just as good as in-state talent as some of these guys that come out from out of state. You know, and prime example, I hate that Ezekiel Rose really didn't get, you know, the time that he had. But, you know, I'm proud of Ezekiel Rose, because Ezekiel Rose was an in-state kid, you know, and he was with me for 2 years. I recruited him out of Clarksdale, Mississippi. And, you know, he ended up going to West Virginia out of here, you know, and you know, stuff like that. We have good talent in the state of Mississippi. So when guys out of state come down here and realize that, then, you know, they got to fight. You know, it's they got to stay hungry and they get hungry because they want to compete and they want to be the best, you know. And that's been the most hardest part. But outside of that, you know, trying to get them to buy into what we're doing here and forget where they come from, you know, it's just dealing with the individual attitude and individual personalities, you know.
Davin Williams, defensive line coach at East Mississippi Community College. You've seen him on Last Chance U, seasons 1 and 2, joining us now on the phones. You mentioned that the one thing you've learned about in your time at East Mississippi is that you care more, and it's taught you to care more. You're one of the few coaches that consistently we saw in Brittany Wagner's office. Maybe that could have been editing. Maybe that was just part of sort of how the filming played out. How much did she impact you when it came to caring more about student athletes?
Well, you know, I listen and learn and watch from everybody. And, you know, my first thoughts on seeing the guys' reaction to her when I first got here, you know, kind of intrigued me a little bit. So she played a role in it as far as me thinking about it. But, you know, as far as me actually putting that emotion, you know, I just had to understand that, you know, some of these guys work that way. And so I kind of, you know, took it up on my own accord to try to dig a little deeper. And I really had to do it in 2015, my second year here. 14, I got here, I was just, you know, running around trying to coach and get them going. You know, I had a bunch of older guys. So in 15, I really had to dig a little deeper because we weren't as talented as we were in 14, but we were still talented. And, you know, I just had to get them to play. And, you know, in dealing with guys like Ron Ollie, you know, silly all the time, you know, but, you know, he responded to that, you know. So she played a role in my decision on taking that route, and along with the kids as well, You know, some kids I don't grown to liking to, some kids that I didn't grow to liking to, but I still coached them up and still showed that I cared for them. And in return, they end up turning around. So, I mean, this is a first for me. You know, I think I've definitely stepped in the realm of trying to be a better coach. Definitely this year as well, 2016, just because of the way the guys responded and the way they went out there and played. You know, just seeing that on the show, I'm like, wow. I mean, because you can't plan that, you know. And so it's a good feeling, man. And once I got my master's as well, you know, in human development leadership, I decided to implement it and see how it goes. You know, I knew the X's and O's, but the bigger part of my coaching that I wanted to improve on was understanding people, understanding how they tick and how they work, taking those graduate courses really helped me out with that.
Coach, we talked to Brittany yesterday on the show, and we asked her if she thought the editing was a fair representation of what she went through. So I'll ask you the same thing. Do you think, based on watching this, that the editing was a fair representation from a football standpoint of what you guys were going through?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, of course there's some things that they left out, but, you know, when people ask me about that, I was like, man, they just press record. They shot the camera and they press record. And it's our day-to-day life and day-to-day living. I think they could predict it well. But, you know, of course you don't see everything. You know, you don't see the times that we have a coaching staff, you know, really love up on these guys. And the time that we actually sit down and talk with them, you know, me, Coach Stevens, the whole coaching staff, you know, those are the things that they don't see a lot on there. You know, they see us yelling at them and getting on to them, which is accurate, but, you know, it's also more good stuff going on behind the scenes than what the show shows, excuse me.
What do you, besides being able to focus more on Ezekiel Rose, which I agree was a cool story, what do you wish they would have focused a little more time on?
Excuse me, I didn't hear the question. My phone was going out. What did you say?
What do you wish that they focused a little more time on in the show itself that they didn't show?
Oh, that's a tough question, man. I mean, just the one-on-ones. I mean, you know, guys like Coach Sanders, for prime example. Coach Sanders, you know, came in and, you know, he was kind of thrown into the mix, you know, as far as his responsibilities and the guys that he was coaching, having to get to know him. I wish they would have showed Coach Sanders more because he's a hell of a coach and he's an even greater guy, you know. And he's grown to be one of the guys that I call the true friend here, you know. And, you know, stuff like him and Ezekiel, you know, and you know, just little things here and there. But those are the two things that come to my mind right now.
Davern, you coached Chauncey Rivers. He had been in the SEC before. Be in the SEC again this fall at Mississippi State. You played D-line in the SEC. You know what it's about. You know what it takes. You've coached numerous players that have played in the league. What should Mississippi State fans expect from this young man in 2017?
I mean, hard work, man. Hard work and you know, having a little dog. But Chauncey's a dog. You know, he can play, you know what I mean? Dog in a good sense, meaning that, you know, he can play. He's a solid football player. You know, he was one of the guys who I really just had to fine-tune. I didn't have to teach him the basics. He had all that. And, you know, the one thing that moving forward, Chauncey's going to have to do is just make sure that he continue to fight when he, you know, when things are not, you know, going his way. And, you know, and when he's tired and in the mood, he's got to continue to fight. But, you know, they're going to get a dog, man. Chauncey's a really good football player. I like his personality. I like his attitude. And, you know, he's going to be a hell of a player one day.
Davern, I know Tyree Phillips is going to Mississippi State, offensive lineman. Why do you think the O-line gets no love in this documentary? I mean, two seasons now, we don't hear anything about the offensive line except...
Oh, of course Cole would go there.
Buddy Steve is telling him to get out of here. He's always coming over there and yelling at him, but no love for the O-line. What's up with that?
Well, Cole, you know, all y'all do is just stand there and hold people. Yeah, ain't much to that. Nobody want to see that. You know what I mean? There's no craft to that position, you know? But, you know, I don't know, man. They the documentary just tried to focus really on, you know, the stories. You know, everybody has a story, but, you know, as far as the out-of-state guys, you know, those are the ones that are going to have, you know, more of the issues in the background. And, you know, and those guys are primarily on defense and scattered out throughout the team other than the O-line. So,
how would you describe Buddy Stevens?
A winner. Point blank, period. I mean, he's a winner. I mean, you know, despite what people may feel about him and despite what people may see from him, he wins. You know, and at the end of the day, you know, that's major to some people. You know, it's major to keeping your job. It's major to recruiting. It's major to the people that work for you. Major to your school. You want to win. So if I had to describe him one word or a sentence, it'd be winner. Point blank, period.
It's also major to Mississippi Slim as well, according to Netflix.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt.
Coach, have you been given any indication or heard anything as far as whether or not Netflix would come back and follow you guys for the 2017 season?
I have not. You know, last year after the first season, you know, it was rumored that they were coming back. And, you know, they were going to be coming here to film this and film that and never showed up. And all of a sudden they showed up, you know, maybe a day before training camp.
Oh, really? That close?
Day before the first game. Excuse me.
Oh, dang.
2 days before the first game. So, I mean, we don't know. I think what they try to do is judge off, you know, the feedback of the show, which I would do. Judge off the feedback of the show and make a decision then. But I don't know. That's one of the things about it. I don't know.
Well, Davern, we appreciate the time, man. It's good catching up. We'd love to have you back soon. Like I said, everybody, all the feedback that we've gotten is just how big of fans they become of you after season two. So we wish you the best and hope to catch up again soon.
Okay, no problem, man. Anytime. Thank you guys for having me.
Absolutely.
Davern Williams, D-line coach at East Mississippi Community College.
Love that guy. Love that guy.
He's a good dude.
I told you Monday, I love that guy, and I want that guy to be my coach for everything. I want that guy to be my radio coach.
You know the cool thing I think about Davern was, and you see it especially a little bit more in season two when he got a little more time, is he's kind of that in-between voice of reason on a lot of things. You know, if Buddy Stevens is going bananas, or if a kid's having an academic off-the-field issue, he seems to be the guy who, and it's very difficult to do this, to pull a kid aside and say, let's not worry about that. We got to go play this game, and you have a job to do. What's it going to take to get you dialed in and focused to do that job? Or let's try and move past that. Let's forget that. I mean, the deal with Chauncey Rivers' mother. And he was the one that kind of said, okay, I get it. You're frustrated. You're upset. Let's try not to worry about that and focus on the task at hand. And to not just flip out and be mad at the kid for getting mad or be mad at the situation that's taking place, it's very difficult to sort of, and maybe that's him, like he said, putting his master's degree to work to be able to say, hey, I realize a lot of things happening right now. Let's try and focus on what your job is, and let's move forward and do that. I would have trouble with that.
Yeah, and I'll just say this one last thing. I felt so much for Davern because I really wanted him so badly to, like, make that Cam Carter kid sit for one of the games. I think it was for the semifinal when, like, the guy just refused to get in the ice bath, and he's just been a headache all season long. I was like, please, 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 please sit him. Just please sit him for a game because I don't know what else is going to make sense for him. And I don't know if that was his call or maybe probably a higher-up call from Coach Stevens. Maybe not. But, man, I just sit there, and you just sort of feel the frustration coming through the screen of Coach Williams. And you sort of see, like, a day-to-day, like, because it's not just a JUCO, I mean, or at a place like this when you got guys who think they should be playing at Penn State or Georgia or anywhere else. There's guys on D1 programs who feel like that, you know, they're not getting enough playing time. They're not going to school, class all the time. It's just, it made me appreciate coaches a little bit more watching this.
Absolutely. All right, we'll get to a break. When we come back, it's time to learn that line. Alabama Crimson Tide Edition next.
Live Cube Show, Stand Up Live. This week we'll have Daryl Hammond in on Thursday. I have a chance for you to win tickets to that tomorrow. So be listening in the 7
Daryl
o'clock.
Daryl
Hammond.
Oh, I thought you meant like the girl from...
Daryl Hammond would be interesting to go see too. But Daryl Hammond, we have a chance for you to win tickets tomorrow. And you'll be listening in the 7 o'clock hour. But call now.
Have you ever seen Splash?
No, I haven't.
It's a weird movie. You need to see it.
I've heard it's weird.
It's really popular back in the day, but it's also very odd.
I have heard it's very weird.
My daughter would love it. She calls him Maymers.
Were those mermaids?
Correct.
Okay.
She says Maymer.
I had to learn. I'm trying to learn how to speak 2-year-old. So
I like Maymer. I don't correct her because I think Maymer's cool.
I think it's better than mermaids. Cole Kublik, we have a great guy here in Cole. He's a great resource. He's a commodity. He's on the SEC Saturday night coming up this year. And if there's one thing Cole Kublik knows, it's offensive line play. And Cole, that's why we're going to put you to work today. Finally get you to do something, because today we're going to play Learn That Line.
Cube Show presents Learn That Line.
Today is Alabama edition, Cole, so whenever you're ready, please help us learn that Alabama line.
Well, there's not too much to learn. We've talked about it on the show a lot, and I think most Alabama fans listening are fairly educated on their line, but we'll start with left tackle. Jonah Williams, probably the best right tackle in the SEC a year ago, and he moves over to left. It's not a seamless transition always, but based on the fact that he repped it in practice last year and the fact that he did get a couple reps in games at left tackle, not important games, but he's been there and done it, and he's known he was going to make the move the entire offseason. I think he'll be solid right there. And Ross Pierce-Baker is a guy that gets a little bit of a bad rap unfairly, in my opinion, at left guard. Is he, you know, the Chance Warmack dominant offensive guard that some Alabama fans would like to see? No, but the guy never misses assignments.
He always seems to use pretty good technique and fundamental. And just because he's not overly physically gifted, I don't think makes him a poor SEC offensive lineman. The guy just constantly gets his job done. I think he's solid at left guard, for Alabama. And Bradley Bozeman really finished the season in a strong way at center a year ago. I mean, he took big steps from week one to weeks 12, 13, 14, and looked good in the spring again as well. So I think left tackle, left guard, center are very, very good for this Alabama offensive line. And keep in mind, J.C. Hasenauer is coming back as a backup center. He's gotten some reps. He's played a lot. So a really nice backup center to have. Because a lot of times, Archie, what you run into is if you're not confident in your backup center, then you have to move some guards around. So if Bozeman goes out, all of a sudden that changes two spots in your lineup, maybe three spots, and that's not good. I think right now, right guard, if you look at who that's probably going to be, is between Lester Cotton, who a lot of folks like, and a lot of folks think is going to probably be the guy. And I think Lester Cotton is talented, and I think he's somebody who can get movement and who can do a lot of good things. But, you know, is he going to be the guy? I'm not really sure. He had an opportunity last year. He had chances to win the job a year ago, and he looked good sometimes. I think mentally he got bumped back a little bit. He missed a few assignments. All of a sudden, he's questioning himself. But he has every bit of ability to be able to step in and do it. And I think DeAndre Brown probably is the guy competing for that right guard spot. And right tackle, a lot of people are just giving it to Leatherwood. But I don't think Brent Key wants to start a true freshman again unless he absolutely has to. And there are some other guys who I think potentially could take that job. Matt Womack's gotten some reps there. He's played some. He's been a guy who they think can be the next right tackle. But I think it is down to those two guys. I mean, Leatherwood and Matt Womack, I think, are the two that will compete. Now, depth on the right side of that offensive line is what could potentially be a problem. If one or two of those guys don't work out and then you have an injury, I mean, what direction are you going to go then? And depth is an issue for a lot of people on the offensive line. It's not easy to develop. It's not easy to have. But I think this offensive line's in pretty good shape. I really like center left. And Alex Leatherwood has the talent to be the right tackle. I just don't know if mentally and emotionally he'll be ready just yet. Not that I question him, but it's the most difficult thing to do in all of college football, in my opinion. And I think right guard comes down to Lester Cotton and Deonte Brown. Deonte Brown seems to be in better shape. He's down to like 340, which is wow. But I think either way, you're going to have a big physical body at right guard and a capable right tackle. So this group's got a chance to be really good. That's why I have him number one in the SEC going into the season.
So in that case, I'm guessing if you're going to give him a grade, if you gave Auburn an A, you're going to give Alabama an?
Yeah, they're an A, maybe an A+.
Just
because they're so good at left tackle, they're really solid at left guard, and one of the better centers in the league. So there's not a lot to dislike, even though you don't know exactly what right guard and right tackle are right now. I like the options, and I feel pretty good about the options. I feel a lot better about Alabama's O-line than I do D-line.